Hey, hello, bienvenidos.
I see you're breaking it out now. All right. Hello. Hello. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Bye Bye Belta. This is Matt Alano Martin. I'm a comedian and a huge fan of The Expanse, which if you're listening to this podcast, you are probably at least one of those things, if not both of those things. You know who is both of those things? Not only me, but also my co-host.
Anna Valenzuela. Hi.
That's you. Yeah.
I'm a comedian, huge fan of The Expanse, frothing with joy over the writing in the fourth episode.
Oh, very good.
Season six, frothing. Very excited. Should we just like get right into it?
Or I feel like we should jump into it. I do think it's interesting that you started recording after you were regaling me with your tale of going to the strip club. That's fine. Some things are for the Patreon. Some things are for the Patreon. Sure, I get it.
You know what? I'll spill the beans. Here's what happened. I decided to have a lonely spinster Christmas, and my friend texted me. He was like, "Hey, girl, we all out here going to the strip club. You want to come have titty Christmas?" So we went to Jumbo's Clown Room and had titty Christmas. And I've had several COVID tests. I have not gotten COVID from the following things: a television set where they made me carry a turnip bucket in the cold. Two, helping a friend lay flooring in his new house while sometimes holding his baby, who would just stick her little inoculation needle fist into my mouth all the time. And three, actual strip club. Have not gotten COVID from it. Masks work. The boosters work. Ladies and gentlemen, whatever Joe Rogan and Alex Jones are telling you is a lie. Get vaxxed, baby. We're out here having fun looking at titties.
Yeah. I'm surprised. I don't listen to Joe Rogan, but I would be surprised if he did not tell people that they should go to a strip club for, you know, to boost their immune system.
Yeah,
you know, to just go. Immunity. So you are, at least you and Joe are crossing on this one. At least you guys are, you know,
exactly
finding some common ground.
It's some common ground. Very, very strange. Also, same friend did tell me that his mother is furious at Joe Rogan because he's convinced his uncle not to get a booster shot. And his mom's a nurse. And I just want to listen to 60-year-old ladies just like yell about how much they hate Joe Rogan for my entire life. I think that might be the funniest thing in the world. Just like mom ass moms being like, "Why would he say things like that? Why would he tell people things? That's just irresponsible."
Gotta get that money. Gotta get that money, son. You know, this is a perfect segue into one of the great lines of dialogue. What good's a revolution if you're not making money from it? I'm paraphrasing.
Well, that is, but also there was some where I imagine the duo of James A. Corey. I imagine Ty just like click clack on the computer, and then just like smiling into the distance, like it's a ray of sunlight just like comes through a window, just like, "Yes, son." Like there was some real gangster lights. Yeah,
the Dos Equis. It's the space Dos Equis guy.
Yes.
The sexiest man.
And he was just like, what's the point of a revolution if you can't make money on it?
Yeah, if you can't get rich from it, or what? I'm paraphrasing it terribly. But yeah, very much in the Rogan Empire like mindset there. I do like this idea, though. But since James S.A. Corey is the two writers together, do you not think that they're just like next to each other on laptops? And then like as one of them wrote that line of dialogue, they just looked at the other one's like, "Hell yeah," and high five.
They like high five, or they did the hardcore hand grip.
Yeah.
They were like, yeah, I would hope so.
And then everyone in the Starbucks is like, "What are those two guys doing?" I'm assuming they write all of their books at Starbucks, like all great authors.
If you're listening right now, anybody involved in The Expanse, if you are listening, great dialogue, especially in Comenaship. Everybody is just crushing it out in these streets. We also, a very fun episode, and I do have a question for sci-fi writers and for sci-fi aficionados. Occurred to me this week as I was laying on the couch, hoping and praying I didn't have stripper COVID. Hey, sex work is real work, but I feel like stripper COVID's probably the best kind of COVID you could get. You know what I mean? Like, I got it from titties. I was sitting there and I realized that in all of the sci-fi I've watched, including like anime, all the sci-fi I've ever watched, it is not very often that we conceive of a world that doesn't have capitalism in it.
Yeah.
And oftentimes capitalism is the villain.
Well, I, Star Trek is the big example of that. Like the whole idea of the idealistic future of Star Trek is there is no money. And therefore there are no fashion choices. There's just, you wear the jumpsuit or some other kind of smock. So like, let's just say like capitalism is good for some things. Okay.
I do have to say, I bought like, I literally during the pandemic bought three jumpsuits. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Three jumpsuits and three pairs of overalls.
Man, yeah. that turnip roll really went to your head.
It really did. Yeah. Yeah. I, you know, I'm a method actress.
Some actresses are out in these streets, you're out in these fields. You know what I'm saying?
I'm out in these fields. I'm pulling turnips, you know. I don't even think California grows turnips. It's not cold enough here. Which, by the way, I'm recording this wearing a beanie and a sweatshirt because I've been so cold and it's only 53 degrees.
Which is cold for LA. I understand. I'm giving you a little Midwest hardship there where I'm like 54 degrees. I would be in shorts and flip flops outside for several hours in that weather. And not even no shirt either. I'm going full Black Flag era Henry Rollins, like little tiny short shorts just out, you know, like chilling with my neighbors. How about this weather, huh? 54.
Well, let's get into it. This was a good episode. I have to say it was a good episode. It was building. I don't know how this is episode 4. Maybe we got 2 more episodes left. How are we going to wrap?
Also, we know now, like we talked about last episode of our podcast, we know now they're not wrapping. They're doing a spinoff series and they're doing at least one movie. So we know they just have to get to like a button. They just got to pause it. They just got to get us to, I'm assuming, a cliffhanger for the movie.
Yeah.
And then from the movie will come the spinoff series, I'm assuming, if it's not simultaneously. So they don't have to completely resolve. They just have to get us to a natural stopping point. And also, they are giving us these little extra, the X-ray bonus content scenes.
We'll do an episode on those,
which I was surprised how much like important shit there is in some of these.
Oh, I haven't watched it yet.
Yeah.
How do I watch it? I'm a spaz. How do I watch it?
Well, and this is for you and for all the spazzes who listen to our podcast.
Thank you. Tell grandma how the, tell abuela how the internet works. How do I make the shows on my computer box?
Yes. First thing, you write a letter to your congressman with a feather quill. They don't have it if you're watching it through a streaming service on your television, Roku, whatever. You cannot access it that way. The only way you can access the extra content is by dialing up your Amazon Prime account on your laptop or your phone. And then when you pause the episode, so you start the episode and you pause it, and then there's like a little thing that says X-ray that comes up, and you click on that, and it has a bonus scenes are what you're looking for. There is a structured theme that they're doing with these. And they're little 5-minute little vignettes, and they don't impact a lot of the storyline, except they are the first to particularly reveal major character things, which I assume are going to pay off at the very end of the season or in the movie or something. I feel like it's a little bit of seed planting for the future. The third episode one was just more fun.
Okay.
And also a payoff to something that we had speculated about on the podcast before. We had speculated on the podcast about something that then comes to fruition in the third episode, the third little vignette thing. I'm assuming it's live now. I've not watched the one for the fourth episode, but anyway.
Okay.
That's how you do it. Go to Amazon Prime on your laptop. Start an episode. Actually, if you start the newest episode and pause it and go to X-ray, you can watch. It'll bring up all of the previous episodes, little bonus content things. So you can just go boom, boom, boom. I highly recommend. There's also like stills and behind the scenes and stuff like that. So there's a good amount of little extra content that you can do it, but it's only accessible through the
gift machine or something. Like,
I don't know. I've not gotten that far into it. Hopefully that would be great. But yeah. So that's how you access it. And we'll do a special little bonus episode on those.
Yeah,
so.
I will get that. I promise you before the next episode comes out, we will get that done. So here we are. Let's just start with the Laconia. So we're at, first off, they keep having shots of the ship above.
Yeah. And this sign that has like little lights that we can kind of tell we're seeing more of the ship every time. And again, is this how they got to look? Is that their ship?
What is that?
It's so unexplained. Like what? Because it does not look like any ship from Earth or from Mars. It's a weird design.
Whose ships is this?
Yes, exactly. Yes.
Whose ships is this?
Yeah. And so, yeah, they're revealing more of that, which is good. We're at the wake for the kid brother. Not a zombie yet. We're definitely headed to Pet Cemetery for sure. And Jesus Christ, this weird Martian commander guy speaking to this child as if she's also a grizzled adult. Just like, what the fuck?
He's just like, hey, kid, I'm from somewhere. No one knows. There's no context for me. Your parents weren't even supposed to be here. Ain't that some shit?
Yeah.
Anyway, your brother's dead. We try to protect you,
but we can't. Like, just all the things you want to tell a child who's just lost.
That man gave her an eating disorder. In that moment, he gave her an eating disorder. She's messed up now.
Bringing in, and I think maybe the writers of the show do listen to this podcast, because I don't know if you caught it, but the way that the kid brother dies is he gets run over by a turnip truck. Shout out to you, their favorite podcaster.
Yes, if they added
some
that
kind of cart, like a cart. What kind of cart do they have that goes so fast that it's just fucking pancakes this kid?
How did he die? Cart to death. It was Mario Kart. He was run over by a tiny turtle, a Koopa Troopa, in a little fast moving cart.
Yeah, it was actually the snake dog. He was driving. He was an unlockable character.
I have no idea how that happened. I also that he equated the kid running into traffic was the same as running through the rings.
That kid was chasing his future, and didn't work out so well for your brother, but for us, it's gonna be good. This is a good thing that we're doing. This is not how the guy talks, but I wanted to be like this.
It was very like Guido Goomba. Like, it's all right, kid, you gotta make this mean something to you.
Ain't this some shit, huh, kid?
It was very weird. And then suddenly another person we've never seen before runs in and talks to the Martian man, and there is science panic. I don't know what else to call it. It's just sciencey panic. And then there's a shot of children in a dark warehouse wheeling other children around. Is that what I saw?
Wait, what?
Did you see it? So in between the theme song, there's like somebody being wheeled out in a...
No. Like, because I think you were writing notes, so you didn't say that. Was the little girl wheeling her brother out of their house at nighttime into the woods. It's the starting...
To bring her back. We're getting the zombie kid, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. They're going to have to change that kid's name to Jesus.
Nice. Every planet needs one. Might as well start with this kid.
That makes sense, because I was like, what the fuck is happening here? I was like, you're right, I was tip tapping my notes and missing shit as
good.
I want to do. So that was it. That's Laconia. And now let's get to the first off. Amazon, you love a theme song that is just a woman singing a haunting slow song. Did you watch Man in the High Castle?
No, Denise did, and she liked it a lot. But is it the same thing?
It's like da, 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 da. It's a song. I can't remember the song. Anyway, it's a song. It's in German. It's real haunting. It's just like, you love a dark haunting thing.
Edelweiss, is that what it is?
It was. Yes. Thank you. It was a slow female, like a slow, sad, haunting Edelweiss.
Oh, well, you know, like if you would have done the slow twee version of Edelweiss like that on The Voice, you would have won because, man, did they love that bullshit. All right. Anyway, I don't know if you watch The Voice, but there's.
I only see The Voice when I go visit my stepmom, because that's what you do when you leave the city is you watch The Voice and you eat at restaurants. You eat at the Applebee's, even though the other Applebee's was better, but now it's closed and it's a Foot Locker.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's the kind of shit you do when you're back home.
That's a big Foot Locker. All right. I do like the Expanse opening sequences. I don't think we talk about this. I do. It's beautiful. It's very well rendered. I am currently watching season 4 of Star Trek Discovery, which I know you've not started yet, but it also at first I thought had a great opening title sequence. If you've watched any of the seasons of it, it's like these drawings, it's these sketches, but then also at the other end, I was like, when are they going to
robots?
Yeah. Like the little robot hands or whatever.
Yeah.
It's very beautiful. And they're building off of traditional Star Trek cinematic score and everything. But also, like, we're 4 seasons in. When are they going to finish these titles? Why is it still the sketches, dudes? Let's put some money into this. I want to see full color, full rendered arms. Why is this a partial hand? Come on, dude.
That's it. It's a style. They're into it.
Yeah. What if the future looked like Leonardo da Vinci's, almost said Leonardo DiCaprio, Leonardo da Vinci's sketchbook? But also, what if it also looked like DiCaprio's sketchbook?
DiCaprio's sketchbook is a bunch of pictures of him, but like the evolution of man is just him getting like more. Have you ever noticed that man is just, he's just swelling up like a pimple, like a
everybody
shiny pimple.
Yes, I know the internet is all about this, and there's a thing now about like how did his head get big? Like it's called aging,
it
happens, and I hate that we are like that. Like, because it's the same way with like. When you do it to anybody, but it's the same thing like with Alec. Yeah, Alec Baldwin got, it happens when you get, in no way am I defensive about this as if you watch it, if you see a picture of me from 15 years ago versus now.
You're just blessed because you're a tall man whose head matches his body.
Oh, no.
If you had actor body, you'd look like a little bobblehead.
Yeah, definitely would. Yeah. But no, I think DiCaprio's sketchbook is just nothing but drawings of Kate Winslet. Like he's still trying to get it right.
Just like a bunch of new 19-year-old women in his life. And he's just trying, I need you to lay there like it's the movie. No, I really need you to do that.
Yeah.
And then I just have to work something out.
And then he has to explain what the movie is because they weren't born yet when it came out. You know, it's a whole thing. It's a whole thing.
Well, let's get to Chrissy's Command. It's Sarah Station. This is pretty short and sweet. We've got Mars. The Mars generals are like, we should just like hunt them down and kill them because fuck them, because they did firebomb their own ship. Right. They're just like, fuck them.
Yeah.
And then she's like, we're not going to play Marco's game. We're not going to do that. And then there's just, I love the text messages are just as big and easy to read as the ones on my phone. People are always like, damn girl, how big is that font? I'm like, listen, all right. I'm trying to keep these eyes.
Yeah.
There is some, basically Mars is going to do their own shit. So there was set up for that. Monica is still alive.
Yeah.
And we find her in a morgue, which I cannot spell. In the notes, it is spelled wrong. And that is my 15th attempt. And I gave up. I was just like, whatever, in a morgue. She's in a morgue taking video of dead bodies like a fucking ghoul.
Well, but she's also telling the stories. Yes.
Okay, but like, come on.
I would have, You did spell morgue as if it's a character from Lord of the Rings. I will say that, as if it's like some sort of like fire demon that they have to battle. I liked Monica in this episode, especially the payoff later on when we see like her sort of her finished special or whatever that she wants to, you know, her special, her 15 minute the stand-up special that she's gonna show.
She does look like a lot of women in comedy.
Yeah,
that actress looks like a ton of women in comedy. Like I thought for a minute she was somebody I knew.
But I thought that yes, it is, you know, and we get to see Chrissy not but you go back on her word when she says, mm-hmm. like, you said I had full access. She's like, I did, you know. So yes, a little ghoulish, but she is trying to tell these people stories. Like, she's recording, she tells the story of like, this woman, you know, told me about how she was a competitive swimmer, you know. So she's like cataloging, remembering their stories, which I think was mm-hmm. good. And then again, towards the end of the episode, we see the payoff, which is the little documentary she did on the man with the cat. And how great, this is what I think maybe the first moment in the episode, maybe not because it is later on, but it's one of those moments where you talked about of like just next level writing, the fact that the cat is called Lucky Earther because he's lazy, he doesn't do anything, and I give him everything he wants. Like, it just gets to the core of this mentality of where the belt has always been, where it's been this exploited class of, you know, and the earthers have just been seen. And we also you know, see, I'm trying to remember. Nope, that's from one of the, there's also a thing that comes up along these same lines in the little bonus episode content for episode 3 that kind of reinforces this idea that earthers, there's the stereotype that all inners are lazy bags of shit that had everything handed to them, you know?
Yeah, I loved that, by the way. He's fat, he's lazy, I give him everything he wants. And yeah. His also the... having him walk around with the footage of him like
yes.
triaging he's, people and it
was and he's helping everyone, and everyone's helping. We see Martians pulling, like helping like belters, we see Earth, you know, like everyone's basically helping everyone in this explosion sequence, mm-hmm. right? Or like yeah. the devastation afterwards, which I think is powerful and is like, again, makes Monica really important to the overall story. And it's not what Chrissy asked her to shoot, but in a lot of ways it is exactly what Chrissy asked her to shoot. Chrissy right. wanted her to do this very one-dimensional thing, like, look how fucked up Earth is, look what you're doing to Earth. Mm-hmm. But this idea of like, no, we're all in together. And then this this very eloquent homeless man, where he's just talking about, you know, it's not inners versus belt,
right?
It's people who want people who hate versus people who are just trying to live, you know.
This is, by the way, the season of good speeches. This was there were a couple of really good speeches in this episode, and in the, well, we'll talk about this, but in the pantheon of great speeches and great lines in Star Trek, you know, in Star Trek, in a sci-fi history, you know, you've got Battlestar gives, I mean, speeches on speeches on speeches on speeches. We've got Edward James Olmos, We're Gonna Find Earth. We've got Mary McDonald's. She's got a couple of them, which is like, we got to make babies, which is a very funny line.
Yeah.
And they turn it into a joke. And they're like, is she commanding us all to like phone? What's happening? And the, I will find you. Like, she has this, she loses her shit. She's like, I don't care if I have to kill you with my eye teeth. I will fucking kill every last one of you. And it is good. So good. And this is one of those speeches. It's not fiery, but it's just like, this is where we're at. Like, this is sad.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is what we're doing to each other in order to, because the people who die in war, this is the same thing in Game of Thrones. The people who really get fucked up in war are not the pivotal players. Right. It's the plot. It's the poor people. It's the guy. It's the unhoused guy with a cat.
Right. And that's what's, I don't know, have you read Saga? Which I'm
not yet. Oh,
but okay. It's one of the main, this is not really spoiling anything because it's within like the first, it's like 10 pages of the first issue. But this idea that it's like a planet and its moon are at war with each other, and they realize they can't destroy each other because it'll fuck up, you know, like the planet, the moon needs the planet to orbit around, the planet needs the moon for tidal considerations. So they outsource their battles, their wars, two races fighting against each other, but they go fight their wars on other planets. And so there's all this mass casualty of random people on these planets who had nothing to do with the fucking war, but it takes place on their planet as like this double away game or whatever. And so it's just a really interesting dynamic. But yeah, you're right. It's like the people who are in, you know, it's not the soldiers. It's everyone else who pays the price usually, you know, or at least, you know, large scale. Should we jump over to the Rossi now? What
Let's
do you
get over
do?
To that Rossi. Okay. And you know what's interesting about the Rossi is it's definitely the most emotional part. Hi, Oscar, our third co-host, my screaming cat.
Lucky Earther.
Lucky Oscar. He's fat, lazy, and constantly screaming. But he, so the Rossi, the reason why I put it in this order is because even though it has kind of the biggest emotional content of this episode, a lot of it we could see coming.
Right.
And And it doesn't really, I mean, what happens on the Pella and what happens in Kamina's crew is like way juicier and drives the plot forward.
Yeah, so. Everything on the Rossi this episode is paying off what we've seen building last episode particularly, but also leading up to it a little bit, like particularly the... Peaches James speech.
Yeah, I love that Naomi is just like, I'm gonna dox their ship. Like she just doxes them. Just like, you know what? I could, your mom's a hacker. I'm gonna dox you. People are gonna know how many times a day you take a shit, kid. Like she's doxing them. Then you've got Amos and Bobby jamming out, fixing stuff in a garage, like two bros.
Yeah.
Two bros to Alex's playlist. Nice little callback to Alex. Mm-hmm. Listen to some of that sad country music and just like do 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 do. And Bobby, what I love about her is she's just like, she's completely out of the joke, right? She hasn't put it together yet. When she does put it together, she's gonna hit Holden. She's gonna put hands on him, which is gonna be hilarious.
Yeah.
But she's just basically like, I don't know how the fuck happened. Like she's just like, how the fuck? How am I? Like she's sitting there just all confused. Like, how did they get over on me? What the fuck is going on? And then Peaches in the middle of this just like shows up and is Eris just like, hey, Amos, can you come look at something for me?
Yeah.
And so she was curious and she knows just enough to be dangerous. She starts dicking around with the torpedo logs and is like looking for the malfunction and finds that it had been manually disabled by Holden.
Dun, dun, dun! Yeah, that's why. I mean, it's just a classic rookie move on Holden's part for not using like incognito mode when he's disabling. You know, bro, can't leave your browser history for everybody to see, man. You got to use that VPN.
He's got a real Democratic National Party like office security situation. He's not crushing it.
Yeah.
He wanted to get caught a little bit. Cause that's
maybe.
He's a codependent control freak. I have a lot to say about him in this episode. First.
Okay. Oh, wait, before we move on. Wait, I do want to talk about this. I do love, again, this idea of Bobby's just like, what the fuck? How did this fucking happen? Which is why I'm putting out a challenge to our listeners. If we've never put out a meme challenge, but if somebody wants to splice together Bobby running around and
then, just being like, what the?
Yeah.
How?
But then put it together with what was his name? What happened?
What happened?
Christopher Guest movie is that from? That was like his catchphrase. What happened? It's from A Mighty Wind. What happened?
Of course, yeah. I just love her just like angrily putting her suit back together and be like, what happened?
All right. So, I do want to talk about that. But then also, before you go off on your James rant.
You made me so mad this episode. You made me so mad.
No, but it is good. I like that we also see Peach's character development is really, really great in this season. I mean, we start to really see it last season in the big prison break, as when her and Amos are maybe the main focus of the entire season, really, if you think about it. But she's continuing to show like what a true crew member and team player she is. Like the fact that she doesn't rat him. I mean, she tells Amos like somebody needs to know this, but she's not going to tell Bobby. And she's like, you know,
she's not going to tell Naomi. She doesn't know.
Definitely not going to tell Naomi.
It's been tense. Mommy and daddy have been fighting. And so she's trying to figure out what's going on. So she goes to Amos, the safest person.
Yeah. So, all right. So now you can go ahead and unload.
So first off, so Amos knows this information and he just sort of like, hey, so did you do this? And he's like, they're fixing something on the outside of the ship. I love that they have emotional conversations just mag booted to the side of a spaceship.
Yeah. I was like, is Amos about to throw Holden into the black void?
Space, like, get out of here. Like, he's like through gritted teeth, you know, did you do this shit? And he basically is like, yeah. And he doesn't even really apologize for it. Like, he's just like, yeah, I did what I did. And Amos sets a really good boundary, actually, like in a really healthy way. He was just like, I'm here to kill Marco. That's what I'm on this whole thing for. That's what we're doing here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anything outside of that, I'm not here for that. And I really like that. I was like, oh, he just really kind of said, like, you keep fucking around, I'm gonna leave. And I like that because it wasn't an empty threat. You know, from Amos, it's not an empty threat.
Right. Yeah.
And
I think James's reaction to that was realistic, and the fact that he's being challenged and he has to step into that captain role again of like, you know, I'll do what the fuck I want, you know, it's my call to make, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, in classic James Holden mode. But then we do get to see James. I really like the scene between Holden and Naomi. And I honestly, I feel like it's some of the best acting that we've seen from, or at least a most expansive. Like it's up there with the, are you all right? Or are you just not ready? Are you just not ready to talk about it? Like there's just moments that are happening in this season with Holden and Naomi that we just have not seen before, like a maturity in the relationship.
Yeah.
And him laying it out, like, and her also saying, don't put that on me. I know he was on that ship. I was like, let's fucking kill my son. Holden's whole speech, I think, to Naomi was great. I thought it was fantastic. And some of that great writing in this episode.
I think this will be a scene that is controversial, at least on this podcast, because I thought his speech to her was great, but it is the essence of codependent control. He is saying to her, I know what's best for you. And she's saying, no, you don't. I was prepared to pull the trigger. We have to end this war. My child does not matter. The greater good matters. And you need to take care of it. And then he does a sidesteppy thing, which in my own relationship dynamics drives me fucking insane. She says to him, like, this is what he says. He looks so much like you. I can't be the, he, okay. So he says, I see how it affects you when we kill Belter ships. So he's emotionally manipulating her a little bit in that line, a little bit, being like, this decision I made is about how you feel, and I see how it affects you. And then he says, in the next breath, I just can't be the one who kills your son. That's what it is, fool. You don't want to live. You don't want to live with the guilt of doing what you signed up to do. So that's your problem, because you're afraid of the security of your relationship. And you came in here, you try to control this woman who was ready to murk that boy because he was ready to murk her.
Right. And she laid it out to you that she went and tried to save him and she failed, and she's kind of, but also
he's dead to her.
I also, I agree with everything you're saying, but also we have seen the way that it's affecting Naomi every time they kill a Belter ship, how shitty she is about it. And also that's a legitimate concern, because she can be like, no, it's cool, dude. Kill my son. Is that going to be cool later on?
No, like, it's not. But that's her road she has to walk down. You know what I mean? If she wanted to say, like, hey, I would like to do what I can to save Philip first, they would.
Right.
Is the thing.
Yeah.
Is they might actually sit down with her and be like, But it's not that she's lost Philip to the physicality of being on the Pella or being around Marco.
Right.
She's lost him psychologically.
Right.
He's gone. She had a moment, a brief window where she could have kept him psychologically. And that's where you get last season, some really good acting from that kid. Really good acting, but he's gone.
Yeah. And we see that big time at the very end of this episode.
Yes.
After Kamina's broad wave goes out. So we'll have to agree to disagree on this one, I think. I see what you're saying.
And on the other hand, if that were my relationship, I'd be like, no, you don't get to make decisions for me.
I agree with all. That's why I think the scene is so great, is because it is nuanced. It has both of these things. Yes, he is doing some of this classic, not putting her actual agency above what he thinks is best for her. Right. But I think there is. Yeah, it's, but I mean, there's some like real, I think there's some real gray shades of gray in there. And I thought that they had nailed it in that episode, in that scene.
They did. It was a very well-written scene, because I'm mad about it.
Right, exactly.
When it comes to scenes and characters and moments in art and in media, if you're a little bit mad about it, it's probably some good shit. So I was definitely like, I was like, why is he doing that? Furious. just furious. And honestly, she is also not making herself emotionally available because of what is going on with her PTSD wise. So there is a moment too where they're not talking 100% about what their mission means.
Yeah.
They're just assuming it for each other, which I think is, again, very nuanced and very realistic in a couple situation.
Right. Yeah. And I could tell that you want to, you know, I know that you say you want to stay on this section, but I could tell how upsetting it's making you. So I'm going to decide that we move to the next section for you, for your benefit. I want us to move on you. I can't be the podcast co-host who's responsible for you staying in this one section of the episode. I can't do that for you.
I love it.
We do. The last thing we see on the Rossi, though, is the great sequence between Peaches and Holden. We're seeing more of this. That was a great scene. And it's so natural. And the little note at the end with, like, that's a lot of salt. And she's like, that's how I like it. It's just this little human moment of just like, all right, cool. You know, like, it was just like, I thought that whole sequence was great. But then we also get into her revealing, like, when she didn't want to kill him. And she gets a good speech here. Mm-hmm. Where she talks about, you know, don't ever feel bad about the people you don't kill.
She is right. Yeah, she's right. Her and Ice Queen are the moral compasses
of
this episode and maybe even this season. They're the moral compasses. But you know what's kind of great too? Is she's a great icy blonde. We're going to get to the Pella. She's a great XO because she's just like,
Yeah.
No, but we'll get to that.
Yeah. Well, I think we're ready to get there because that's the next section, unless we have more to talk about Peaches.
I thought Peaches was right. I mean, at the end of the day, I might be mad at the method. I think Peaches was right. And ultimately Holden made a good decision for his crewmate and his lady, his partner. Mm-hmm. But I also think that his communication around it is where the violation is. Does that make sense? Anyway, that's my two cents. He would never want to be in a relationship with me. I would kill him. I would have spaced him seasons ago. Hey,
Anna, but don't feel bad about the romantic partners you haven't killed. Okay, I want you to take some pride in that.
I've killed some, yeah.
So let's jump to the. Let's jump to the Pella. Which, by the way, I don't know if we've mentioned this yet, but is there a little something here, Marco? Pella, Marco, Pella. You like, is that a fun game that they play sometimes?
Marco, Ice Lady. I have no idea.
You get that I'm going for a Marco Polo joke, right? Okay. Yeah, okay. All right. Okay. All right. Okay.
Okay. Marco Pella. Yeah, probably. I mean, I don't know. There might be some puns in there.
There might be something in there. Maybe. But we see Marco saying everyone needs to get spaced for his fuck ups. Basically, these other ships.
The essence of that is like, how could they fail when I made a bad decision?
Yeah. Yeah. How could they have gotten outgunned the way that I got outgunned and then made the decision to run away, which I ultimately then also made that same decision. Yeah. But then this is also where we see his XO, the icy blonde, like defy him. We find out later on. She only calls for the spacing of two of the three people that he said to space. And that is some real Balter mercy.
Yeah. Right there. I showed that you can do mercy.
You only killed two of the three.
Oh, that's what you call mercy.
I guess. Yeah.
He also reassigns, he punishes Philip, who, by the way, wasn't deliberately missing the Rossi. He got outgunned by Bobby.
Right. He's
he just couldn't hang, you know, and he's good at what he does. So he reassigns him to just like basically putting up siding on the plane, on the ship. He's just putting up like aluminum siding. He has to go to trade school down below. And he's at ITT Tech. And he has to do Naomi work, basically. That's kind of the equivalent of like Naomi work, although Naomi's smarter than
that. Yeah, I did not put that together, but
she's not back like a tin knocker, but she can but do
she's,
it.
She,
yeah.
But that her original roots, we do see her doing that kind of stuff. Like we see, like we go all the way back. That's kind of her core background, and that's what her and Kamina sort of bond over is when early on in the series when she has sort of returned to her Balter roots, then that's the like at the end of the day, every Balter is a scrapper, is a repairer, is a jack of all trades that does whatever you have to do to survive in space. So I didn't put together the connection. It was Naomi work, but you're absolutely correct.
And you know what's really fun too, I just remembered, for those of you listening who are like, Anna, how could Anna be missing the name of Duella from Battlestar? But so she's very much the Duella of the ship. She is like, hey, calm down. Philip learns, he just basically like learns how to do some shit, but he has a fun moment where he gets distracted by the news. Not by the fact that he's a young man, probably with co-occurring ADHD from, you know, years of living in God knows doing what else, you know? So the stress living, he gets easily distracted, obviously, and loses his little plate. They catch the plate and he immediately turns into Marco and is like, this is your fault because you were distracting me.
Right. For Which a I second.
Was really interesting.
For a second. Yeah.
Yeah. And then no, he flashes back to being a Philip. Like,
right.
He
catches himself. And and I think this whole sequence with Phillips is great because we do see him like this is maybe a better place for him to be, or he's having some actual bonding. He's not this
he makes a friend.
He's not on this pedestal as treated as Marco's son, you know, like he's always been. And so that the whole sequence of him and the guy then fucking with him when he acts like he's trapped underneath the nuke and it's just like, ah, I'm just fucking with you, dude. You know, it's all great. And it's all great, especially because then at the very end, we see him flip back to Marco Jr.
Yeah.
And so what, like, we do see this tension inside of Philip of like, he wants to be this better, more chill, more humanitarian kind of like kid, but he's caught up with the ego of what's been drilled into him from, you know, being raised by Marco, like, you're the heir to the throne, we are like this, we're champions, we are the kings, you know, it's all about the revolution. And so he's like battling, he's almost needs to be deprogrammed, really, is what's happening. And so
he's like the Trump kids texting Donald Trump on January 6th being like, hey, we should really do something about what's happening here. This is a real bad look for you. And him not doing anything. It's kind of the same role where it's like it's Don Jr. having Trump on his podcast, you know?
it's like you
just shit on him the whole hour, you know, but he still just wants to be his dad's little mouthpiece. And so I don't know, that's what I
said.
But it's but everybody's way better looking on the Pella.
There's no doubting that.
But yeah, and then he's in the mess hall. He seems to have made a friend. He is able to exchange a joke. He was able to laugh at himself. I think it's the first time you see Philip be like, ha, ha, I'm a boy. LOL. And then Kamina's broadcast hits. Great speech of the season for me so far.
Yeah.
So good. And Kamina's broadcast hits and he basically does not like what his friend says, which is interesting. Well, at least the Belters did it to us and not the Inners,
right?
Which is kind of like a minority response, like a poverty response. You know what I mean? Like, oh, at least we fucked ourselves this time.
Yeah.
You know, and Philip loses his shit and decides to become a little tiny Marco of the mess hall and, you know, starts to be, we've got to follow behind my dad. My daddy is stronger than the mean lady.
I was glad that we didn't see then everyone in the mess hall like, yeah, you're right, you know, they were all just kind of like staring. I'm like, the fuck is this kid, like, this, what, like, they're just all like, cool,
don't, I mean, you know, this is the lower decks, bitch.
Yeah, or also like, yeah,
we're all red shirts down here, calm down.
Yeah, like, oh yeah, speeches are upstairs. We don't do any speeches. There's no speeches down here.
Speeches are upstairs.
Small talk only. Small talk only.
Small talk. Busted balls, small talk, and light sexual harassment. That's what happens below decks, fool. Maybe some suicide notes, but no speeches, sir.
It was a great turnaround to see that how deep the programming is really going. The only thing left that we talk about on the Pella is the Icy Blonde. I think we were talking about Icy Blonde when she goes into Marco's cabin and lets him know that she didn't space the third guy, stands up to him, lets him know. And you had put in the notes like this good, this great line of like, things like this roll off of you, right? Like where she's telling him who he should be.
She's interesting. She's a little Ty Saul meets like a campaign manager.
She's definitely a campaign manager.
She's
got
very West Wing vibes a little bit. Like, she's really like crafting him as they go. You have to, you don't do this.
So you see her as the Leo of West Wing, kind of.
I do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So kind of a chief of staff, kind of like, she definitely is filling into that role.
She's a fucking Leo.
Mm-hmm. She's a what's wrong with Leo? Your fellow, 12 stepper.
He's the oldest of men.
Some people like that.
Not me.
So I do like that she has this line, and it's almost like it's something very simple that he can latch onto, like things like this roll off of you. And then he's like, you know what? I'd like to roll onto. And then he like gives her the drink. Like he starts like pumping up the sexual tension, the workplace harassment,
the psychosexual, because here's the thing. Everything is transactional.
Right.
With a person with narcissism, with this kind of personality. Right. So he basically says, realizing that she saved him from himself yet again.
Yeah.
Doesn't like that she has power over him. Because she can wield power over him. So very instinctually, little shark eyes.
Yes.
Talk to his little shark boner. And they're like, okay, bitch, what do you want? And she's just like,
Well, because then like he understands control, the arrangement.
Yeah, exactly. I would like control of this station because that is a position of power. And that is where all the commerce happens. So it's all the good money. And I want that dick. Can I have a drink?
Well, I don't know. Hopefully she doesn't get that dick, because I feel like she loses power. She loses her power over him as minute that she does.
But that's what he's trying.
That's what he's trying to do.
He's trying to get her hammered and like a Hollywood producer.
Please name this episode "That Little Shark Dick." That's
little
my
shark dick. I was going to name it "Speeches Are for the Upper Decks."
No, that's good too. Yeah. Speeches Little Are for the Upper Deck is really funny. Little Shark Deck. Yeah. Put in parentheses. I don't know how long a title can be on the podcast service without it being annoying. But yeah, if you want a parenthetical, it that little shark dick, that'd be fine.
Yeah. It's so silly. So that's what happens on the Pella. And then Philip. Yeah. So now let's get to your girl, your home girl. She had a great episode. Not as much time spent on the storyline.
No.
But
a lot happens. It's a big payoff.
Yeah.
So we see they're going to do the space heist. They're going to go after the stores. They are in they're floating in. They've got the ship parked far enough away.
That was so terrifying to me. I was like, that's the most terrifying thing I've seen on the show, is just four people like just floating together.
Yeah.
Into the nothing.
Yes. Yeah. No. And that's like, again, super hardcore belter shit too. Like, I'm just like, oh, that's fine. We've got a tiny little psst, 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 psst. And when they throw out their grappling hooks, they slam onto that fucking deck, man. Yeah. Like they don't go down soft. But yeah, you had put in the notes that you thought that the space floats look like a giant coronavirus.
They do.
I thought that it was like, oh, it's Katamari Damacy or whatever.
Katamari, which also kind of looks like a virus.
Yeah.
It looks just like, it looked like a what he calls them? One of those little, it looked like a dandelion and.
Two tethered balls of this, and they're like in a rotational axis around each other, so they're not going anywhere else in space. They're keeping in that's how they're staying where they are in space, right? It's because they're spinning and making their own like sort of centered orbit. So they get in there. It looks just like a bunch of shipping containers, which I love how just like basic it is, and everything. It's a warehouse.
Warehouse. That's the Jeff Bezos cameo. He just comes by on a forklift.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Now, like there's people pissing. There are people pissing in bottles. Yeah. That's actually what they interrupt. That's why those people were so mad.
Yeah.
Like when they're like, hey, we're trying to pee in our bottles here. Like you're going to mess up our numbers.
And eat a sandwich at the same time.
So they discover that it's pressurized. Why would it be pressurized? Right before they get jumped, they see heat signatures in one of the containers.
I'm literally yelling the whole time. This is a trap.
Oh,
this is a trap. You're in a trap.
The fact that they opened the doors without their guns drawn, I thought was very bizarre. When they first breach it, it's like, why are they not all strapped, ready, like pointed, ready to go? Yeah. Like, you don't know what the fuck's on here. So they get jumped by the security that they're not ready for. A bunch of them get killed. They kill a bunch of them. Our one Kamina crew member gets to act out his favorite movie, 127 Hours. You know, he loves it. He's like, look, I know this is a weird ask, but could you come and saw my arm off with a knife? That would be great.
What's great about him, by the way, is I knew that just from the angle, I was like, oh, they're going to cut that man's arm off.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Even if they got the container off of him, he wasn't going to keep the arm.
Yeah, they were going to amputate. Yeah. So,
And it's a good redemption moment. It shows the usefulness of Mira. Her name is Mira.
Yeah, yeah. Sure.
And she hops in, and because when it comes to space work, she's hesitant. But when it comes to doing what people fucking need to be done, you know, she's just like, move out of the way. No, right. You're going to make this man bleed out. Put a belt on that thing. She's suturing. She's doing stuff that she's just like, you know what? We're cutting this arm off. Fuck it.
Yeah.
And she just cuts him in. She makes decisions where nobody else can do it.
And
she
so quickly.
Has compassion.
Yes. And she makes it so quickly. You know, like the decisions are so fast because it looks like the girl that she belts it. And then the handle breaks on the fulcrum, the lever, the Kamina and Dos Equis man in space are lifting the crate. And when she's like, oh, that handle's broken. We got to fucking just cut it off. Like there's no getting him out now. Just super quick. I thought it was great. When we then see them back on Kamina's ship, I don't know if you saw this, because like they got his stump in like basically a snow globe. It's like there's like a weird glass tube on the end of his stump arm, and it's got like little blue particle things in it. Like it looks like it might be like the healing thing, you know, like kind of like the med doc chairs that they sit in.
Yeah.
But this is just literally a big glass case over his
I was typing.
Go back. Because it literally looks like they just stuck a fucking snow globe on the end of his arm.
That's amazing.
And he's laying there, and then she crawls into bed with him. And so that's, you know, good. Like, I thought that whole sequence was great. I thought she was great when she's like, I love you. And then she starts sawing his fucking arm off.
Yeah.
Good.
Because these are the two, by the way, these two characters have been the polarizing force.
They've been fighting.
His life. And she just looks at her. She's like, I'm sorry, I love you, but I'm not even supposed to be here. You guys were supposed to get rid of me. And now I'm going to save your life by cutting off your arm. Yeah. All of this is going
to
suck.
She's like, I'm supposed to be in Paris. All right.
Yeah, I'm supposed to be in Paris. But the Kamina then leaves.
No. Kamina's watching. You were taking notes. So Kamina's watching from the doorway, watching the now one-armed Jack. We're going to call him Jack. He's the one-armed Jack. And so Jack in bed with the snow globe arm and the Mira nurse like crawling into bed with him. And so Kamina's there. Like watching, and then she's like being very sympathetic and like, oh, this is one of my crew members. How did this thing go so bad? And then she just like, you see her turn it on and like, nope. And that's when she walks into the bridge, which is upstairs.
Where speech
because there's
happen.
A little speech needs to be made.
Needs to happen. She goes upstairs. She's like, put me on comms, put me on open comms, like put me on blast.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And she basically tells Marco, hey, guess what? You've been stealing from us, motherfucker. You've been stealing from us. And guess what? We're going to, we stole from you. You've been hunting me. Go ahead. Try to hunt me. Try to kill me. And then she ends and she calls him basically like, she calls him a traitor to the belt.
Mm-hmm.
She reveals that he's been stealing from them and keeping supplies,
hoarding supplies and starving them.
She reveals that he definitely set off the explosives in Ceres, and or at least she puts that out there. You know what I mean?
Right.
She puts that out there. So now it's not at the beginning of the episode. Chrissy was like, "They'll think it's a false flag if we tell the truth. We have they got us. They'll think it's a false flag." But coming from Kamina, a goddamn war hero,
right?
Like, yeah. They believe her. They believe her more than they believe Marco, because she hasn't fucked them the way that Marco has fucked them. She says, I have not bowed. I have not bent a knee. So she's also saying, bitch, I ain't in with Mars. I ain't in with Earth. I am doing this on my own. And then she ends on a line that just like, oh, it's so good. Live shamed, die empty.
Yeah.
And that's the end of the trans. Live shamed. Die empty. I can't. I'm going to say that to somebody someday.
Do you have someone in mind?
No idea yet.
Yeah.
No one's ever made me that angry.
Oh,
where I've looked at them and been like, honestly, if I were to run into Ghislaine Maxwell on the street right now, I would look at her and go, live shamed, die empty. And then I would just walk off.
Oh, you have a very different delivery on at that time than you had. Hey, dog.
It would be live actually shame, real casual with her. I'd be like, hey, girl, what's up? Hey, live shame, die empty. And then just keep it pushing, you know, that is the most baller fucking shit. I just the writing and then just closing the laptop again, just like, I'm hard now, you know, like that is that. Oh, that was the swag. That speech is good.
It's a great speech and a great editing in this episode too. We don't see the end of the speech till the end of the episode. We see her beginning the speech and then we cut back to the Pella. And then we finally see in the broadcast version of it, that actual line, the end of the speech and the reveal that we got it on camera. We're stealing your shit that you stole from us, you know? Yeah. I do want, and hopefully this will be this week's extra little 5-minute vignette thing. Mm-hmm. I hope there's an extended version of that scene where she says, live shamed, die empty. And then Space Dos Equis man just leans in and goes, stay thirsty, my friends. And then just... He just comes into her frame and then
actually,
she just pushes
you have them. To because we have all your water.
Yeah.
Shout out to props, by the way. All those water containers are like REI water containers for emergencies. Like I was looking at that. I was like, those are, I knew exactly what I was looking at. I was like, there's water in there. We have one under the house.
There you go. Yeah. Fantastic episode. I mean, again, this season just continues to knock it out of the park. And I was wondering, are we feeling this way about this episode or this season? Because we thought up until recently that it was the end. And so we were just like pouring all of our nerd love into it. Like, it's so great. It's so great. I don't know what's going on with this planet and the zombie kid, but everything else is so great.
And here's why. I not only am a Game of Thrones book fan, I am a show fan, and that show broke me so hard. So I came into this much more willing to be critical.
Okay.
And willing to, I still don't know what's going on with this planet.
Yeah.
I definitely know that the news that more content is coming gives it a lot of grace.
Right.
But if there were the same kind of logical problems that were happening and also production issues that were happening with Game of Thrones, I would say it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, we've not seen a Starbucks cup yet.
Not seen a teeny
two more episodes.
A tall Starbucks cup for a man who is probably as tall as the Starbucks cup. You ever notice this Kit Harington with the littlest Starbucks? Littlest man with the littlest Starbucks.
Well, you know what they do for him is they give him the little cup that they give your dog with whipped cream in it. They give him that cup, you know.
He puts it in both of his hands.
Yeah, he's a cold.
I'm sorry. If you're listening to this, I it's an old roast battle thing. I just love emasculating people. I'm so sorry. Whoever you are, I can't help it. It's like the crux of my humor. And I have to stop because, you know, we're in a post-gender world. So this isn't going to work anymore. But I do have to say it is very funny to talk about how tiny actors are. I just think that's okay.
Well, you're right. Yeah, I do think you need to be more sensitive towards people. But luckily, actors aren't people. So you go, girl.
She leans back I'm on a balancing stool for people with bad backs. And I just want you to know that. That's so funny. So this was a good episode. I can't wait till the next episode. This is again, another episode where if I was watching this the way that my roommate, Brandy Posey will watch it, which is all in one chunk. Cause she doesn't want to wait. If you're binging this, you're going to feel much more satisfied than we are right now because
I love
a lot of setup to some climax.
No, but it's great. Yeah. It's dramatic edging and I'm here for it. You know what I'm saying? Like, let's just keep this feeling going. Keep this
dramatic edging. I love it.
So I don't know. Are we going to do the James Holden soft boy of the episode award?
You know, I'll know who mine is always.
Is it James Holden?
It's James Holden. James Holden, why'd you do this time? Yeah. You butt. How dare you? He needs to start saying he's sorry every once in a while.
Yeah.
You know, like, I get it. You gotta be a commander or whatever. Just be like, listen, I'm sorry I went down that way. You know, we'll see how it goes. I'm just really bothered by other people's codependency.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That has become apparent as we
it really bothers me. I'm like, let her learn her lessons. Yeah.
I'm gonna go soft boy award is gonna be One Arm Jack. At least for a small amount of time in this episode, he was tenderized.
Hey,
yeah.
He was so soft.
Part of it is so soft. So juicy. So juicy and soft. And now in a snow globe, which is pretty soft, pretty adorable.
Happy holidays, everybody.
Yeah.
Happy holidays. I don't know where this is going next. I have no idea. I have no idea what's going to happen next. And that's what I love about this show is I can't predict it. I was told the reason why I'm taking I'm going to college again for screenwriting is because I was told by a bunch of comedians I have to stop predicting the ending of shows, both episodes and series, because or take that ability to do that and start writing. Okay. And I can't predict the show, which is one of the reasons why I love it.
Do you have a good track record of predicting and therefore ruining shows for your friends? Is that what that was all about?
Yeah. Sorry about that. If you can surprise me, then I'm yours forever, ladies and gentlemen. When I read The Expanse on the regs, you know, it catches me in an off-guard storytelling place. It catches me in a creative storytelling place where I'm like, oh, I wouldn't have thought about it that way.
Right. So yeah. No, there's always moments that you're not expecting to receive, which is why, again, it's the greatest sci-fi property of all time. I know that you are true to Battlestar Galactica, but for my money, The Expanse is the greatest. And it's got some stiff competition. But I mean, to me, it walks a line more successfully than any other sci-fi property has ever walked for as long as it has, as far as like over the course of six seasons now.
Battlestar was only meant to go to four. Four seasons, and I could be partial because Edward James almost looks like my dad.
Sure.
So
he looks like a hundred 12 steppers, like all in one man. That's what Edward James really almost looks like.
I will compare all sci-fi properties to Battlestar because it is literally a thing I watch every 4 years, and I love it so hard. But if I do compare it to Battlestar, that means I really like the show.
If that
makes any sense. If I'm comparing it to literally my favorite thing of all time, it's definitely up there in my favorite things. The production and the production value, everything, this show just looks so good.
It's so good.
Like, everything about it is just so good.
I also don't have any predictions for next episode. I mean, we're going to see some sort of response from Marco with the theft of the food and the supplies. I think we're going to see more Belters joining Kamina's, we're going to see more of the Golden Bough type of thing where more people are breaking off to join her in resistance against him.
I think we're going to see Naomi reach out because Naomi, because they both believe they're dead or aligned with the other side. So this is the first sign of life Naomi is going to have of Kamina right now. And that's going to be great for her. I think we're going to see something interesting.
Yes.
Maybe Naomi will take off again and go be with the Belters, you know,
which
might be better for everyone, you know,
just
for a little bit. I'm not saying they need to break up. I'm just saying they need to like, maybe not work together so closely all the
time. You know. On that note, I will say that you desperately need to watch this extra content because there is something about Naomi and Kamina's relationship in there that is very telling and does fill in some gaps for this season. So let's end it on that. Let's end it on that for you and for all the listeners. Go watch all of the little 5-minute, they're called X-rays. Yeah. Check it out. Anna, where can people find you on the interwebs?
You can find me at Anna V is Fun on Twitter and Instagram. That's Anna with two N's. And you can, and TikTok and all the things. You can also go to AnnaValenzuela.com for my website stuff. And you can also listen to me on the 12 Questions podcast, 12Q pod on all the social media, a podcast I host with Mr. Dave Yates. So you can hear me yell about like 12 step stuff.
It's
maybe not as silly as this podcast. But Matt, awesome. Where can people find you and all your things and your fantastic album? Thank you for sending me this.
Thank you. Hopefully you're not just saying that. Hopefully you actually enjoyed it. I do want to just say one quick thing, as you can also see Anna all major Christian holidays at Jumbo's Clown Room in Hollywood, celebrating the Lord Jesus Christ Through them titties.
Just trying to summon equity in Hollywood, just like watching strippers make more money than I do in a month.
But they're doing it for the baby Jesus. My name is Matt Alano Martin. It's a very unique name. If you just Google me, you'll find me. MattAlano-Martin. I'm on all the things. And you'll find all of those if you Google me. My band, Belta Lauda, which I named after a little television show / book series of my favorite of all time.
Favorite thing of all time. Have you read the book yet? Favorite thing of all time?
I have not.
Yeah, read the book.
I will eventually read the book. I don't want to, I know I joke around about not reading. I don't read a lot. And usually when I do read, it's stuff that I can't get anywhere else. Like, I'm a big fan of Ursula Le Guin, and a lot of her sci-fi novels have never been made into any other sort of media, or if they've done it very poorly. Like The Lathe of Heaven, an amazing book. They did
John Scalzi, baby, Old Man's War.
All right, cool. So I will check that stuff out. But yes, my band Belta Lauda, our new album comes out January 7th, available for pre-order right now. Beltalauda.bandcamp.com. I shouldn't have to spell Belta Lauda for you listeners of this podcast. You know how that's spelled. Go there. We're an angry socio-political punk band. And this new album has a lot of stuff about death, because I lost a lot of people this last year and a half. But it's fun.
That's why I liked it.
Screamy way.
My morbid ass. I was like, I think that's good.
All right, cool.
I dig it. But I don't know if you could take my opinion. I listen to a lot of anime soundtracks.
Earlier today, someone said it reminded them of Gil Scott-Heron. And now we've got anime soundtracks. So we've got these two. If that's what the band sounds like, what if Gil Scott-Heron made an anime soundtrack, guys?
That's what it sounds like. I'm just saying I enjoyed it.
I'm glad that you enjoyed it.
But my taste is compromised.
I think that's true of all of us in this day and age. So shall we let these people go?
Bye-bye.
We should say
bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Belta. End. No, not end meeting for all.
End recording.